Now on 77 WABC, your New York weekend.
A guy who has terrorist on speed dial. Is he gutsy
or crazy?
It's Aaron Klein, investigative radio, with WorldNet daily reporter and John Batchelor contributor, Aaron Klein.
As we enter our second hour of Aaron Klein Investigative Radio, I continue my live broadcast from Tel Aviv, Israel, under rocket threat. I have new information about what really happened in Benghazi. It seems that the story might be bigger than even I originally thought. This is what the Obama administration doesn't want you to know about what happened in Benghazi. First of all, we have former CIA Director David Petraeus resigning in an affair scandal with his biographer. The affair scandal now turning into a four-ring circus, including a general. But I'm not going to go in that direction, even though right now we have absolutely no idea exactly, if any, what crime Petraeus or others may have committed. And yet the FBI and other agencies had the authority, apparently, to go through Petraeus's emails. But we're not going to go there either, because the story that I have is quite a bit bigger about what happened in Benghazi. Petraeus now testifying in a closed-door hearing on Friday morning. Now, why was this a closed-door hearing? Is it really because of intelligence concerns about the questions that are going to be raised there? Or are there also political considerations for the Obama administration? They don't want the media inside knowing what is happening in this closed-door hearing. I don't know the answer to that, obviously, because I'm not privy to the information. I'm only asking the question. So it was a closed-door hearing, and in it, Petraeus finally admitted that the agency, the CIA, determined immediately after the September 11th Libya attack against what the media is still describing sometimes as a consulate, even though I told you time and again the United States never had a consulate in Benghazi, Libya. And I told you what was really going on in the mission. That's what it was a mission in Benghazi. So Petraeus now admitting that the CIA determined immediately that Al-Qaeda involvement was suspected in the attack, and yet it was taken out of the final version of the information that was circulated to administration officials. This was according to a top lawmaker, Peter King, who was briefed. Now, right away, it's easy to get into the charge that this is yet again the Obama administration. This is yet again John Brennan, who believes that jihad is really an internal struggle and goes to different events, sponsored by the Muslim Brotherhood-oriented Islamic Society of North America, and he talks about how Muslims shouldn't be profiled, President Obama scrubbing the term terrorism from the entire government lexicon. So it's easy to say that that's what was going on, that we have Obama with his head in the sand, doesn't want to know about a terrorist attack, doesn't want to know about a jihadist attack, and yet still sends his spokespeople, including Susan Rice, on morning shows to claim that there was some sort of protest, popular protest, in front of the building in Benghazi. The consulate, quote-unquote, was not a consulate. The government, though, does not call it a consulate. Interestingly, they call it a mission, blamed it on a jihad, on a Muhammad film that had nothing to do with anything. But I believe that's not the case. I believe that isn't the story. I believe Al-Qaeda wasn't simply scrubbed from the information on who was behind the attacks against our mission in Libya because the Obama administration doesn't ever want to hear about terrorism. I believe it's much further. Al-Qaeda is a key word, a key group in what was really going on in that U.S. mission in Benghazi. They did not want that out. And what was going on, I've been telling you, is gun running to the opposition throughout the Middle East and North Africa, even when that opposition consists in large part of jihadists, including even their leadership, Al-Qaeda. I've been telling you about this for months now, since the attack, about how Stevens, Chris Stevens, the ambassador, U.S. ambassador, before that originally the U.S. liaison to Benghazi, where he arrived for the very express purpose of helping the opposition in Libya at a time when the opposition leader openly was a leader also of an Al-Qaeda affiliate organization. I've been telling you about what really happened in that building, about the many and sundry meetings that that Stevens and others held in that meeting, in that mission, with officials from Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, where they would coordinate aid, where they would coordinate help to the opposition that consists in large part of jihadists. However, I've got new information now indicating from Middle Eastern security officials that this mission wasn't simply a place where the aid to the opposition in the Middle East and North Africa was coordinated. It was the place. It was the headquarters of planning. It was the headquarters of intelligence. It was the headquarters of coordination. The headquarters, the CIA annex in Benghazi, is the largest CIA annex that the United States has in Africa. This was the central place for planning of aid to the opposition throughout the Middle East and North Africa. And when I say aid, I certainly mean arms. And when I say opposition, I mean those leading the insurgency against Bashar Assad in Syria. I mean, before that, those leading the insurgency against Muammar Gaddafi in Libya to depose those two regimes and create whatever comes in its place. And who are those leading the opposition? It's jihadists. It's Al-Qaeda. Even the New York Times has reported this. So in other words, whoever was involved in this gun-running scandal, whoever was involved, whichever agency from the U.S. and other countries, but we're focusing on the U.S. right now, they were very likely in full violation of U.S. law, of multiple U.S. laws of material support for terrorism. That's the real Benghazi scandal. And so it seems this wasn't just a place where this was going on and other things were happening. It was the place. And for us not to know this, we may never actually know who really attacked that consulate, that non-consulate, I'm sorry, that mission, that gun-running mission. Now, we know that Al-Qaeda jihadists on the ground were certainly involved in the attack against the consulate. Although, by the way, Al-Qaeda as a whole has not largely taken responsibility. You would think if they were behind it, they would be boasting about this left and right. A major victory for them, September 11th. But who benefits from attacking that mission? Because obviously the question that you would ask me is, well, okay, if the mission was being used to arm jihadists, including Al-Qaeda, in fighting the different regimes, and you know Al-Qaeda hates Syria, by the way. Al-Qaeda hates these secular regimes. They want an Islamic caliphate. And of course, we know that the Muslim Brotherhood and the other Islamists come to power usually in these countries after these secular regimes are deposed. And when I say secular, I don't necessarily mean that they don't violate human rights. They certainly do. But why would Al-Qaeda then come and attack the very gun-running mission that was aiding them? Well, it could be that we were aiding only some segments of Al-Qaeda and others we weren't. Or maybe these jihadists that attacked the mission, and here's a major question that needs to be asked, but nobody's asking it, because nobody really knows what happened in Benghazi. Who benefits from attacking this this mission? Well, it would be Bashar Assad. It would be Iran. It would be the elements in Libya who still were loyal to Muammar Gaddafi. They certainly in the past have worked with Al-Qaeda and jihadist cutouts. So these other countries, could have potentially used Al-Qaeda and jihadist cutouts to attack our mission in Benghazi. Now, we have Peter King, who spoke to reporters after Petraeus testified on Friday to the House Intelligence Committee, saying that he and other lawmakers still have plenty of questions about the aftermath of the attack in Benghazi. Well, Peter, you shouldn't just have questions about the aftermath of the attack. You should have questions about what really happened before the attack, what was taking place. So what I have done is I put together a list of questions. Representative King, I hope you're listening right now. Write it down, take down these questions, and ask this to Petraeus. Number one, obviously this is the first question, did any agency directly or indirectly aid in any material way support for the opposition in the Middle East inside this mission? Number two, did they know that and if they didn't, my God, did they know that the opposition that everybody knows includes jihadists, did they, whichever U.S. agency was involved here, did they know that they were running arms, that they were giving support to jihadists, indeed that the leadership of the opposition includes jihadists? Number three, and we already know the answer to this, but please, Peter King, ask this. Did this U.S. agency or agencies, give weapons to Al-Qaeda? Did they give weapons to any members of the opposition who included Al-Qaeda? Number four, and this is key, who was running this? Did the president know? Did General Petraeus know? Now think about it. All right, there's a mission out there that's changing the world. What they were doing in the Middle East was changing the landscape of the entire Middle East and North Africa. This is world developments. This is massive. This was news around the world constantly about what was going on there. How could simply some cutouts, let's say a rogue department in some agency in the U.S., be running this? If the president didn't know that an agency was changing the entire landscape, the makeup, the leadership of the Middle East and North Africa, then that president has no idea what he's doing. Obama had to have known. Now, did Obama know and deliberately want to create some sort of Al-Qaeda caliphate? I don't think so. I think this is the progressive ideological do-gooders who will break a few eggs in order to make an omelet. And if breaking those eggs include giving aid to Al-Qaeda in order to depose these leaders and then put in place whoever comes after, we know that it's Muslim Brotherhood leadership. So who approved this? Did the agency or agencies in question, another question for you, Peter King, understand they were violating multiple U.S. laws? Well, that's enough questions for now. I'm going to be taking questions and comments next. Number here, MyPillow.com, full line, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. As I continue the second hour from Tel Aviv under rocket threat, a lot going on. I know a lot of people have many questions and comments about the war right now, Israel in the Gaza Strip. So I'm taking your questions next, 1-800-848-9222.
Tempted and tried. Shine.
Aaron Klein Investigative Radio.
President Obama. I play that for the President of the United States, who I'm getting more infuriated by the minute. And as I'm sitting here and telling you about what's happening in Benghazi, as I'm sitting here and reporting to you what the disasters of our foreign policy have wrecked in the Middle East, the placement of the Muslim Brotherhood in charge, and now we have a U.S. president who dares to tell Israel to not go into the Gaza Strip with ground troops. He prefers that ground troops are not involved when Israel has to defend against the very Muslim Brotherhood partner, Hamas, that President Obama has been emboldening. So that is quite infuriating. 1-800-848-WABC is the number here, broadcasting, as you know by now, from Tel Aviv, Israel, where it's really quite difficult for Israelis day after day to be under the barrage of rockets. So I have a lot of friends who themselves have been quite afraid. What I did last night is I had a Fajr 5 party at my house. I wanted to lighten the mood, so I invited about 40 people, turned into like 100. I think I had half of Tel Aviv in the house. A Fajr 5 missile party in defiance of the Fajr 5 missiles coming into Tel Aviv. But before you get the wrong idea, it wasn't that kind of party. It was very diplomatic. I even had a Knesset member there and then some diplomats from the U.S. Embassy. All right, let's go to the phone lines here, and we will start with Joel in Manhattan. Hi, Joel.
Good morning, Aaron. First of all, please be both safe and be careful. That's the most important thing. The question to ask of you, given the fact that our ambassador, Ambassador Stevens, was at the mission, along with the two SEALs and the other diplomatic aide, had it been to the fact that these particular individuals had been either Hispanic American, African American, or any other, quote, minority, and since this was prior to the election, do you feel that they might have been afforded any different type of preferential treatment or any other type of treatment whatsoever other than what they did receive, where we just left them out there in the cold?
No, I don't think that and if we can drop the call because I have a lot of blowback, I don't think that the race of Stevens had anything in the world to do with the decision or not to give security. I don't think that the Obama administration is only giving security to minority ambassadors. Of course not. But what's interesting here is you have Susan Rice, you have Samantha Power, but in particular Susan Rice, who in the immediate aftermath of the jihadist attacks against our gun-running mission, that's what it was, in Libya, Susan Rice goes on all of the television talk shows and misleads the nation. And so, of course, Republicans criticize, as they should, Susan Rice for her misleading the nation. Of course she should be criticized. She lied, bold-faced lie after lie, protests that didn't take place. So now what we have is the usual progressive smear tactic of racist, of sexist. A dozen female members of the House, you may have heard, staunchly defended Ambassador Susan Rice, this is Politico.com, against Republican criticism over her remarks of the deadly September 11th Libya attacks, suggesting the GOP lawmakers' comments were racist and sexist. How dare they? What is this? This is absolutely ridiculous. They are once again hijacking the legitimate race issue. It is legitimate. There is some racism. It's not institutionalized. But every single minority, every single woman ought to be offended by this. She goes on television and lies to the nation. And so, of course, people are going to criticize her. And so now they're trying to silence that criticism by suggesting that it was racist, it's sexist. This is just getting warmed up. This is even before Obama actually finishes his first term and moves off officially into his second. Can you imagine the kind of silencing tactics that are going to be coming my way and your way? All right, thank you, Joel. Let's go to Shmuley in Lakewood, New Jersey. Hi, Shmuley.
Hi, Aaron. First of all, thank you very much for your show, and I would really appreciate if you get yourself a daily show during Bein Hasdar. Second of all, I want to ask you, why is it that when Israel attacks terrorists, they get all the civilian casualties listed on the air, but when America goes into Afghanistan and Iraq, those civilian casualties don't get reported?
Yeah, and of course America should continue to fight the war on terror. I will just point out that America has carpet bombed many times in Afghanistan, in Iraq, many civilian casualties, and yet every little civilian casualty in a place that is tiny, a tiny den, where Hamas, I can't say it enough, they use civilians as human shields, so of course civilians are going to be killed in the defense against Hamas. Every civilian casualty is blown up, even when it's not a civilian casualty. You saw that faked footage that was aired by CNN and the BBC of that poor Palestinian guy being carried away, and then he gets up because nothing was actually wrong with him. All right, Shmuley, thank you. Let's go to Viviana in Brooklyn, New York. That's a great name. Viviana, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. I had a question also for Peter King. What role did George Soros, if any, and that pseudo group that was supposed to stop these type of insurgencies in the Middle East have? And was Petraeus' lover telling the truth when she intimated that there was a rescue attempt for an al-Qaeda operative that was detained?
Yeah, I don't really... It wasn't just an al-Qaeda operative. What she suggested was that the United States had a secret prison, which would be in violation of a law that they signed, in Benghazi, Libya. I don't know about the prison. I do know Jennifer Griffin, who does an excellent job at Fox News, reported many times that indeed this is the case. There was a prison there in the CIA headquarters in Libya. But that I'm not going to judge them for or not. I'm not against imprisoning al-Qaeda members. I'm not going to make some sort of problem with that. But yes, George Soros is a founder and a key proponent, I cannot stress this enough, of the very military doctrine. Let's go back to Libya. Let's go back before the consulate to the to deposing the regime of Muammar Gaddafi. How did it happen? Something called responsibility to protect, that we, the United States, have a responsibility to act in Libya. Well, guess who funded responsibility to protect, the very military doctrine used in Libya? Why, it was none other than George Soros, Dr. Evil. The guy has been funding also the opposition groups throughout the Middle East, throughout North Africa. Even I told you, what was it, 3 weeks ago, if you missed the podcast, check it out at KleinOnline.com, told you about the way that the new investigator, sure, the cover-upper for the United States in Libya, Obama appointed him, Thomas Pickering. Well, he's on the board of something called the International Crisis Group with George Soros. The ICG has actually been behind responsibility to protect. They're behind the doctrine also of the United States. They've been pushing for this for a long time, to engage the Muslim Brotherhood, to engage even, guess what, al-Qaeda. They argued for al-Qaeda to come to different governments, including in Algeria. And so now, when the mess that Obama and George Soros and Brzezinski and others wrecked in the Middle East comes to fruition in Gaza, we, the United States, tell Israel it's preferable not to send ground forces in. Thank you, Vivian. Let's go to George in Manhattan. Hi, George.
Yeah, Aaron, have the anti-war leftists in Tel Aviv learned anything from the rocket attacks on their city? And also, I want to ask you, why doesn't Israel expel the foreign news media?
Yeah, you ask a good question. I'll tell you, I hate to say this, but I'm a little bit delighted that rockets are being launched at Tel Aviv. I don't want any casualties, of course. Nobody should, there shouldn't be casualties on either side. That being said, I think a few rockets here and there at Tel Aviv is a good thing to get through to those peaceniks in the coffee shops so that they could understand that their kind of mentality brings what is now being lobbed at them from the Gaza Strip. You know, I have several friends who came to my Fajr 5 party last night. I do hang out with people who completely oppose every single thing that I say in politics, including I've got quite a few leftist friends. Let me tell you, they support this war. I have one friend, I'm not going to say his name, he knows who he is, he's probably listening to the podcast tomorrow, so when you're listening to the podcast, You know who you are. You've got on your Facebook profile pictures of you at the Peace Now rallies that you like going to. Well, he was at my house last night. He supports this war. So I think that this is a good thing because it takes the, well, not this, the war, but a few rockets that don't actually hit anything in Tel Aviv. They should be scared. They, the peaceniks in Tel Aviv, this is what you brought. This is your doing. You, the ones who urged Israel to evacuate Gaza, the ones who urged Israel to make peace with Yasser Arafat before that, and Mahmoud Abbas is the deputy now who doesn't represent anybody. All right, well, we do have to get to Hezbollah. Are Hezbollah cells operating inside the United States? Well, one lawmaker says yes, she's got important information, and she's here, plus more. Your calls, 1-800-848-WABC. That is all next.
Sometimes I feel discouraged, and I think my work's in vain. I'm tempted off to murmur, to grumble and complain. But when I think of Jesus and what he's done for me, then I cry to the Rock of Ages, hide thou.
Today, earlier, we've been talking about the war in Tel Aviv, Israel. I also detailed for you what is the real scandal in Benghazi. It's bigger than I thought. However, right now, one lawmaker is warning that Hezbollah, Iranian-backed Hezbollah, may have infiltrated the Mexico border, may even infiltrate the United States, and worse, perhaps the Department of Homeland Security is ignoring or minimizing this threat. Well, we're going directly to this story. We are joined right now by that lawmaker, by Representative Sue Myrick of North Carolina. Congresswoman Myrick, welcome to Aaron Klein Investigative Radio.
Well, thank you.
All right, so what can you tell us right now about the immediate threat to the U.S.-Mexico border?
Well, you know, we've been writing letters and trying to stay in contact with the Department of Homeland Security for 2.5 years now, literally. Since, you know, basically summer of 2010, because former DIA people and others have told me what is going on. There have been a couple of arrests in this country relative to people who have had ties to Hezbollah or Iran. And my concern has been that, you know, with the drug cartels and the gangs, et cetera, that are operating in Mexico, there is what I have been told a very strong presence there, of coordination between the two. Now, Department of Homeland Security says that, you know, they don't find them operating in Mexico. But I'm very concerned about the fact that they've been in Central America and South America for so long. We all know that. That's a recognized fact. And our border is not secure. We do not know who's in this country. And I really believe because of what is happening with the growing presence of Iran, their influence in those areas, and it is a growing presence, that there is just opportunity for them with our weak border that we have to come into our country. And, you know, the administration has plans to withdraw DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency's role in border security operations, you know, in conjunction with DHS, the Department of Homeland Security. And it really concerns me because they're the intelligence side of what's going on the border that they provide to DHS. And that really is a very important component to how we know what is going on. I know some of this, of course, is classified that we can't talk about, but on the other hand, that there is a way that they can develop a strategic plan, you know, to address this, and they just don't want to do that.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think they don't want to address this? Because this is a very serious threat. It goes back at least a decade in Central and South America. It goes back to at least 2009, probably sooner, in Mexico. Even WikiLeaks had information finally made public that Hezbollah cells, according to information that they had from apparently some classified reports, were using the drug trafficking routes, the well-planned drug trafficking routes from Mexico into the U.S. Also, we had that arrest of Jamal Yosef. This was in 2009 in New York City, where it was learned 100 M16 rifles, 100 AR-15 rifles, 200 hand grenades, and explosives, anti-tank ammunition, etc., etc., were stolen from Iraq by his cousin, an alleged Hezbollah member, and stored in Mexico. So why do you think the Obama Department of Homeland Security, the border control agents, are not taking this seriously?
I have no idea. I will say that we have some very good individual border control border agents who do a wonderful job. You know, I mean, they do their job no matter what, and that's positive. And I do know that back, it was in 2010 as well. I think that was actually in February. There were a couple of ICE officers that were murdered at the border. And they did create a task force just to investigate the murder of those ICE officers. And so we wrote to them then and said, you know, why don't you broaden this, which is what we've been asking them before. Why don't you broaden it to investigate, you know, the strategies and the tactics of the cartels and whether they're connected to Hezbollah. But there just hasn't been any movement whatsoever to get this done. And, you know, they're in charge. You know, they make the rules as far as how it can be handled. And I'm really concerned that this is a big problem. You know, we've got plenty of problems in the Middle East, as you said at the start of your program. But this is one that we aren't giving good enough attention to, and I think one of these days we're going to wake up with a very big surprise. And people will say, oh, my goodness, we had no idea. But, you know, when you mentioned using the drug trafficking routes, well, why not? I mean, it's already set up. You know, they've got their system in place. They've got their tunnels. I mean, you name it. So why wouldn't they work with them? I mean, there's no reason to assume that they would not.
Well, you know, on the other hand, maybe we actually don't want the Obama administration to take this threat too seriously. Look what they did in Mexico before with the drug threat, Fast and Furious, allegedly sending guns to Mexican gang lords. So who knows, maybe in this case, the Department of Homeland Security could send in some cocaine to Hezbollah and then try to trace the cocaine. Imagine that. Now, of course, I'm just joking, but in all seriousness, Iran, and this is very serious, is inching closer, is driving closer toward nuclear capability. Now, Iran has surrogates, chiefly Hezbollah. Can you imagine if Iran gets a nuclear capability and then gives that capability? Because a lot of people think that the Iranian threat is thousands of miles away. Well, it's all about Israel. It's about the Middle East. It doesn't affect the United States. Yes, it does. They could give nuclear capability to Hezbollah. And then we're talking about suitcase nuke, EMP threat, who knows. So let's take it into the U.S. do you believe right now, Representative Sue Myrick of North Carolina, do you believe that currently there are Hezbollah sleeper cells operating within the U.S.?
Well, I truly do think it's possible that there are sleeper agents of Hezbollah within the U.S. I really have been told that by other people, but that hasn't been substantiated, of course, by the Department of Homeland Security. I will say also that the Drug Enforcement Agency does a very good job of trying to keep track and control of this, and some of the information that I have gotten in the past has been from people, you know, within that agency. And they're very concerned about what is going on in the area, on the border, in Mexico, Central America, South America, because, of course, they work that all the time, and they've been watching it for years. So that's my main concern, is what have they already brought into the country, and where is it, and what can they do to cause harm to us, because we know that's their intention. I mean, it's no secret. They publicly say that.
They do, and there's absolutely no reason to believe they're not here. So the question is, why is DHS ignoring this? And the question is now posed to Janet Napolitano and the Obama administration. Sue Myrick of North Carolina, Congresswoman from North Carolina, thank you for being here. I'm going to be taking questions and comments next, just a few minutes left of Aaron Klein Investigative Radio. Continuing from Tel Aviv, Israel, where I know people are on the line. They want to continue to talk about that issue, and I've got a lot more to say. Hopefully we can get to it in the following few minutes, so keep calling in. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Back with more calls next.
For Aaron Klein Investigative Radio.
Talk about a child that do love Jesus. Here's one. Talk about a child that do love Jesus. Here's one. Once I felt the snares of Satan falling, then I heard the voice of my Lord calling. Talk about a child that do love Jesus. Here's one. Talk about a child that's been converted. Here's one. Talk about a child that's been converted. Here's one. Ever since I heard the gospel story, I've been climbing up the road to talk about a child that's been converted. Here's one.
Jesus walked this lonesome valley. He had to walk it by himself. Oh, nobody else could walk it for him. He had to walk it for himself. I must go and stand my trial. I got to stand it by myself. Oh, nobody else can stand it for me. I got to stand it by myself.
And what happened? And then they did nothing until 2009, and they jumped on Israel's case for Operation Cat Sled. Once again, Israel was giving certain under-the-table and over-the-table security guarantees about Gaza. And what happened? We're right back where we started again. Israel seems to get taken every time with believing these security guarantees that comes from Washington, which is really sad. Now, the other thing that Israel needs to put its foot down, and I mean it really hard, is Israel is forever being condemned for civilian casualties. This is where the Hamas puts their people in the line of fire against UN law, human rights law, and then turns around and is able to get Israel and the international community to blame Israel for this is ludicrous. Israel needs to put its foot down. When they start talking about civilian casualties, they should say, do not talk to us, talk to Hamas. They are putting them in the combat zone. And Israel needs to get firm about this.
Yeah, well, Israel, when you talk about these security guarantees from Gaza, number one, among those guarantees from the Bush administration is that Israel would retain what's known as the main settlement blocks in the eastern sections of Jerusalem and in the strategic Judea and Samaria, also known as the West Bank. Well, Obama already went off on those security guarantees in his first term. Now, I'm told by Palestinian sources that during a second Obama term, which he secured, he will push for an Israeli evacuation of much of the strategic West Bank. But I also want to note, forget these security guarantees. What about Israeli leftists? I was asked that a few minutes ago. I remember when Ariel Sharon pulled out of the Gaza Strip. He announced, he told everybody in Israel that should the Jewish state ever need to go back into Gaza again, I mean, how could the world not understand? Of course, the international community would be with Israel because they got out. And then if anything should happen, that shows that Israel did everything for peace. And the world, Ariel Sharon guaranteed Israelis, would be with Israel if it needs to defend itself in Gaza. Well, we saw exactly how that worked in 2008, 2009. Israel accused of war crimes. And the war crimes charges are going to come again. Believe you me, they're coming again from the Arab League, probably from the United Nations. So every leftist in the U.S. and around the world needs to pay attention to what is really happening right now in the Gaza Strip. Thank you, Stephen in East Sound, Washington. Let's go here with Catherine in Manhattan. Hi, Catherine.
Hello, Aaron. I have a question in Benghazi. If our CIA was secretly funding and arming the terrorist rebel Al-Qaeda or Hamas with weapons and funds, then why did they rebel and suddenly attacked and bombed our mission place?
Well, that's what I was trying to explain during the first segment of this hour, that it doesn't make sense that Al-Qaeda on its own would have done this. Who would benefit from this would be the other leaders who are now facing an insurgency, like Assad, like Iran. So could it be that maybe we don't even know what happened in Benghazi, the world doesn't know?
Threat
you're way ahead of the curve by listening to this program because you have the information I'm putting out, and that is about the gun-running missions throughout Benghazi. So therefore, could it be that actually the Al-Qaeda cutouts, whichever Al-Qaeda group, Ansar al-Islam here, that a lot of people didn't hear of before. Ansar al-Islam, I heard of it. I know that Syria, that Iran has had different talks in the past behind the scenes with this organization. They have ties to it. So could another country have used this cutout to attack us? In other words, did Syria or Iran or any other country that right now might face an insurgency carry out this act of war using surrogates? These are questions that I think need to be posed, the real questions, to Petraeus by the representatives, by congressmen who are going to be continuing this probe. But right now, I don't really have much faith in the probe because it's being done in private and because they're focusing on the aftermath. Forget the aftermath. Forget the lies after. Focus on what happened before. Catherine, thank you. Let's go to Mark in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. Hi, Mark.
Good evening, sir. I'll be very quick. You're short on time. I'm a retired military officer, and I know under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, aiding and abetting, aiding and providing comfort to the enemy is considered treason, penalty of death. My question to you, sir, is this extended to any agencies, agents under the executive branch, and I'll go directly to the head of the CIA, which would be General Petraeus. If he not only was providing comfort to an enemy of the United States and resulted in the death of an ambassador and ultimately to the commander-in-chief of the United States, if these acts were done deliberately and knowingly, would they be subject to the laws of treason under our Constitution?
Well, I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but treason is aiding and abetting the enemy during a time of war. But I would say that we're always at war in the war in against terror. Plus, I would certainly say that there was a war that we were launching in Libya. We, NATO, the United States, included in Libya. And so at that time, were we aiding and abetting an enemy? And would that be treason? That's a good question. However, there's no question that whether this is treason or not, it is in full violation of U.S. law of material support for terror. In fact, there couldn't be any more violation than actually giving arms and aid and money and who knows what else and equipment to Al-Qaeda. That violates U.S. law, multiple U.S. laws. Treason, I don't know. But I do think, and I'm not an activist here, it's not my job to take things further. I only report. But as an analyst, I believe that this Benghazi scandal, the real true scandal, has the potential to bring down President Obama. That's how big I think it is. That's how much information we still don't know. That's how furious I believe the American public would be should they know that we armed Al-Qaeda under the guise of opposition, under the guise of revolution throughout the Middle East and North Africa. It's a major, major scandal, bigger than Fast and Furious, bigger than Iran-Contra. Let's go to Greg in Chatham, New Jersey. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, Aaron, you just took the words right out of my mouth. The Democrats during the Reagan administration made a huge deal about Iran-Contra. This is Iran-Contra on steroids, and we have to see this all the way through. Peter King is the tip of the spear, and I agree with you. I think this could bring down the Obama administration, and if, in fact, this is what happened, this should bring down the Obama administration.
Well, I mean, look at the media. They made a big deal about Mitt Romney's binders. They made a big deal about these faked papers that weren't even real about President Bush and his war drafting. They made a big deal about Sarah Palin's son with no evidence whatsoever that it really was her son. Was it not her son? Where are they? And why are the Republicans not asking? Well, maybe they are. You know, I'm not at the closed door hearing, so I don't know what's really going on. But it's certainly not leaking out that anybody has any concept, true concept, of what really happened in Benghazi. And so it leaves me to this program and to other programs. There are some programs out there, one in particular, not going to mention the guy's name, but he seems to really like taking my information and then making believe that he's the one who invented this stuff. When he's not, he takes it right from me. But that's okay. At least it's getting out. Glad it is getting out, including on that particular radio program. It's not on this network. Don't worry. Anyway, thank you, Greg. Let's go to all right. Let's go here to Victoria in White Plains, New York. Hi, Victoria.
Hello. I wanted to know also about the Benghazi situation, whether it's possible that the reason that they don't because of recruiting jihadists in Al-Qaeda, that the security was told not to be there so that they would never find out. But I also had another thing.
Because a lot of people ask two questions and I forgot to answer the second one. Let me just tell you about the first one. It is very interesting about who was and was not providing security at the consulate. That company, Blue Mountain, is very, very interesting within itself. And it could be that Blue Mountain may or may not even be some sort of cutout itself involved in the scandal. So look at who is providing the security. Victoria, maybe quickly, if you can throw in the second question with 30 seconds.
Yeah. Well, very quickly, you should get on the Geraldo Rivera show. But the second thing is about George Sada, who wrote the book, Saddam's Secrets. He said that the weapons of mass destruction were flown to Syria.
That's right. So pay attention to Syria. And did any of those weapons get into Gaza? That's a big question. This story is only going to expand. Benghazi, Gaza. I'm going to be here next week. Be sure to check out Klein Online every day. We just posted a very interesting story about terrorists and beautiful women and Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. For now, signing off from the city of Rockets Red Glare.
Okay. Anybody have any comments or anything to share or ask? Did everybody like that? Was that okay? I wasn't sure, but when I saw he was going there and doing a special show, I thought maybe you'd be interested in hearing it. Well, if nobody has anything, we'll shut her down until next week. Any last call, anybody? All right. Thanks for coming, guys, and we'll see you next week, God willing. And the river don't rise.